Good morning, everybody. Last week was the week that we take our annual survey. We take a little survey of our church, who are we and what are we doing. And we'd like to include people that missed last Sunday. And so if you're here today, but you were not here last week, you did not fill out the survey, if you would raise your hand right now, they're going to give you a survey as you're holding your hand up there. And then we just ask you to drop it off at the Welcome Center on your way out afterwards. It only takes about 3 minutes to fill this out. Both sides, we're looking for one per person. Just hold your hands up. They promised me somebody would be coming. But I don't see anybody coming. We're going to give this another 15, 20 seconds maybe. All right, you know what we're going to do? We'll circle back around and we'll try this again later. That's what we're going to do. You know, it's always something. Yeah, if that's my biggest problem, I got no problems, right? It's always something. And you know, we got something to celebrate because this week, this church is 42. We're going to do it later, Liz. I'll have them raise their hands later and we'll try again. This week is our 42nd birthday. 42 years this week. So I've been leading this church for a long time, and I've, of course, visited not only this church many, many times, but lots of other churches. I do have a confession to make. Having spent my life in church, from the very first Sunday after I was born and very many Sundays thereafter, I've had a lot of trouble with people most easily described as religious people. You know what I mean, religious people. Now, you might think, is he talking about me? No, probably not. But, you know, people who tend to major on incomprehensible rules and a lot of condemnation and criticism of anybody who doesn't do things their way. You know, right when I first came to Chicago, I was a young man, my parents became pastors of this little church in a western state. And in this church was an older woman who fit the stereotype of a religious person perfectly. She always wore black. She never cracked a smile. And she was sure that because of all the rules she was keeping, she was certain to go to heaven. And she would flat out say, I am earning my way to heaven. But as my father put it, she had a long tongue. She could find fault in any and every situation. She could tear a person apart with her tongue and often did. She was perhaps the nastiest person in that whole little town, and everybody knew it. And she considered herself spiritually above everybody else and entitled to run the church and tell everybody else how to live, which often got her in arguments with my father, who thought otherwise on all these points. While my father was there, a number of newcomers showed up, and they seemed to like the church until they talked to her. After that, they never came back. So that's what I'm thinking of when I think of a religious person. I've met some of these people over the course of my life, and I have a hard time with them. You know, I think of these as legalistic people, you know, and full of selfishness and pride, all under the cover of religious language and sort of, you know, the appearance of religion. And that kind of turns me off. In fact, that's why a lot of people these days try to say that they're spiritual but not religious. Heard that before? Now, I actually understand the I'm not religious part. And I have a lot of sympathy for that side of it, if you're thinking of those kind of religious people. I'm not always convinced about how spiritual they are along the way. A lot of the people I knew who said, I'm spiritual but not religious, didn't actually seem to be that different in the way they were living than the nearby atheist who just flat out admitted he was living for himself. So, are those really the only two choices? Thankfully not. The Bible actually gives us a way out. It gives us a way to truly be spiritual without being religious and without being a legalist. And that's what's outlined in our reading for this week. We're doing this series, Eating Well. You've already heard about it today. We're working our way, and we're just finishing up the book of Romans. And we come sort of to the wrap-up part where he starts, you know, in concluding remarks. And that's where we're going to pick up today in Romans chapter 12, beginning of verse 1, where we're going to learn about being spiritual without being religious. Brothers and sisters, in view of all we have just shared about God's compassion, I encourage you to offer your bodies as living sacrifices dedicated to God and pleasing to Him. This kind of worship is appropriate for you. Don't become like the people of this world. Instead, change the way you think. Then you will always be able to determine what God really wants, what is good, pleasing, and perfect. Because of the kindness that God has shown me, I ask you not to think of yourselves more highly than you should. Instead, your thoughts should lead you to use good judgment based on what God has given each of you as believers. Our bodies have many parts, and these parts don't all do the same thing. In the same way, even though we are many individuals, Christ makes us one body and individuals who are connected to each other. God, in His kindness, gave each of us different gifts. If your gift is speaking what God has revealed, make sure what you say agrees with the Christian faith. If your gift is serving, then devote yourselves to serving. If it is teaching, devote yourselves to teaching. If it is encouraging others, devote yourself to giving encouragement. If it is sharing, be generous. If it is leadership, lead enthusiastically. If it is helping people in need, help them cheerfully. Love sincerely. Hate evil. Hold on to what is good. Be devoted to each other like a loving family. Excel in showing respect for each other. Don't be lazy in showing your devotion. Use your energy to serve the Lord. Be happy in your confidence. Be patient in trouble. And pray continually. Share what you have with God's people who are in need and be hospitable. So the Apostle Paul here is summing up that all he has said thus far as an explanation of the incredible depths of God's compassion. While we were enemies, Christ died for us. And as a result, we're not only forgiven, but justified, and not only justified before God, but also heirs of His promises with Christ. So how should we respond? It's sort of, you know, like after you sing that song we sang today about how He chases us down. What do you do with that? What should we do? How should we respond? We should worship God. But how should we worship God? And this is the kicker, he says, by offering our bodies as a kind of living sacrifice to God. Now, the order is really important. The order. You have to get the order right. We don't sacrifice to God in order to get His compassion. Okay, you can give up all you want and you're not going to make God any more compassionate towards you. He's already got more compassion than you actually could possibly imagine. His compassion comes to us free. We sacrifice to God in response to having already received His compassion. And if you don't realize that you've received God's compassion, then you won't see any need to sacrifice. But when you know that somebody has really done something big and compassionate for you, most people's natural response is to respond in some way. So he urges us to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice. And this translation puts it simply as, this is like appropriate worship. But the fuller meaning here is that, in the words, is that it's rational worship. It's the substance of worship. He says it's your, you know, rational, substantive worship. And in other words, this is what's really spiritual, is what he's saying. This is what it means to be spiritual and not religious. If you wanted to put it in short, then I would say the truly spiritual life is a life that is sacrificed to God. Now, our first problem is that 21st century Americans, most of them are not well acquainted with the practice of sacrifice. But the Romans who received this letter in the first century understood it perfectly. When most Romans wanted to worship a god, they took an animal, very often their very most valuable animal, brought it to the temple, and there they would slaughter the animal, and its body would be given to the use of the temple and its priests. To make a sacrifice, you gave up ownership of the thing that was sacrificed, and you no longer could use it for yourself. It became of use for worship and for the God that you are sacrificing to. But the living God, of course, is not so much interested in your animals as he is in you. So we are called to worship God by making our own bodies a living sacrifice to God. As living sacrifices, we not only belong to God and his use entirely, but we should consider ourselves to be dead to ourselves, dead to living for ourselves, dead to being in control of our own lives. When he says, make your body a living sacrifice, like that, it's like, okay, like it's the deal. That's a sacrifice. It's like it's not going to be yours and it's going to be dead. Now, here's the challenge. Nothing could be more contrary to the prevailing ideology in America today than those words. Make yourself, present your bodies a living sacrifice to God. That is not what the prevailing ideology is. Because what you will hear again and again and again from teachers, from movies, from theater, from counselors, from bartenders, from hairdressers, from just about anybody who's saying anything is a litany that kind of goes like this. Be yourself. Be true to yourself. Amen. Trust your feelings. That's a popular one in a certain movie series. Trust your feelings. You have a right to be happy and fulfilled with whatever your heart desires. You can be and you can do anything. And it goes on and on. Me, 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 me. People who go against the grain to be themselves and pursue their own fulfillment and pleasure are the new heroes. Especially if they can take a stab at the old legalism. But you know, the thing is, it's all still the worship of self. It's the worship of selfishness. And is it any wonder that there is so much selfishness around? And that so many children are being abandoned and abused because they are getting in the way of having it your way and trusting your feelings. Because you know what? When your two-year-old is waking up 10 times a night, your feelings cannot be trusted. Just saying. But for we who have been brought back from the darkness by the sacrifice of Jesus, the call then is to lay down our lives as living sacrifices. Not to like find ourselves, be ourselves, live for ourselves, but to die to ourselves. To live each and every day as worship to God in whatever way we can, denying our selfish desires, denying in our behavior, our own feelings much of the time, and even denying our own rights. Recognizing that we belong to King Jesus, life is no longer about us, and it's no longer about our fulfillment, our pleasure, or our rights. Rather, it's all about him and all about pleasing him and upholding his rights. As living sacrifices, we live as though dead to ourselves and alive only to him. Now, if you really think about this and you take this seriously, this is utterly radical. Utterly, completely radical. And it's also utterly freeing. To stop living for yourself, that's how you live free. It's how you live in peace. Because it's a constant fight otherwise. And it's the true source of happiness and contentment. If it's not about you and it's not for you, then there's no need to worry and there's no need to strive. And that is what is truly spiritual. Not keeping the rules, not rejecting the rules, or rejecting the church. All irrelevant. Not making your own religion where you can do whatever you already want to do and calling that spiritual. No, not that either. Not trying to get for yourself everything you can get out of life. Not that either. All of these other kinds of spirituality, they're just fake cover-ups for good old-fashioned selfishness. And there's no heroism in that. The heroism is when people lay down their lives for God and for others. Now, you may count yourself as a follower of Jesus. You might go from church from time to time. You might come here once every other month and call it regular attendance. You might even pray and read the Bible a bit. You might be a good person who stays out of trouble, doesn't rock the boat. But that's only enough to kind of get a little religion. You want the real stuff? You really want to be spiritual? You really want to get connected with God? Then it comes out of making yourself a living sacrifice to God today and every day. Lay all of it down. Give it all to Him. From this moment on, let your life become one of following God's plan, God's direction, God's purposes, and determined to worship Him with your whole life, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, as best you can. And I guarantee you, you'll never be the same. Now, Paul urges us to do this, and then he begins to outline for us what a sacrificed life might really look like. It's not just saying a prayer and checking it off your list. It's actually an actual way of living. So what does the sacrificed life really look like? Well, first of all, it's a different life. He says, don't be like the people of this world. If the good news about Jesus is true, then we should be different. But again, if you're not like everybody else, you're weird. I don't know about you, but I'm not a great fan of being weird. I've never liked being weird much. Most of us don't. You know, and when we're different from the people around us, it puts us in tension with them. And sometimes within our own selves, we feel tension. And yet still, the call is, if you're making your life a sacrifice to God, you'll be different. Not just a little bit different. Not just different in what you do on Sunday morning. No. A lot different. The word he uses when he writes that we're to be transformed is the root word for metamorphosis, which is the term we used for when a caterpillar is transformed into a butterfly. Like, it's a radical change. Our life is to be as different from the norm as a butterfly is from a caterpillar. We end up being different because in the end, if we belong to Him and we're dead to ourselves and everything is worship to Him, then we have different goals, different commitments, and different values than everybody else. And you can't help but be different. I remember during my first job here in Chicago, I was working with the IRS, which was mostly fun on my side of the desk. Everybody at work spent all their break times talking about how they were going to get the next promotion and how they were investing their money in the options market, which was really hot in those days, and all other kinds of schemes to get richer than they already were, and that's all they ever talked about. And it wasn't long before I started wondering, like, am I missing something here? Like, why am I not, like, on this thing like they all, you know, I sort of like, they all, that was all they wanted to talk about. And it's sort of like, I just was, like, not getting it. Like, what am I missing? And then I realized I just simply had an entirely different set of goals in my life. Not that it's wrong to want a promotion or to make a higher salary or to make good investments. But if our life is truly sacrificed to Jesus, then pleasing Him is our highest goal. You know, when it comes to our commitments and values, it can be difficult to be different, especially in the 21st century. These days, if you don't agree with the prevailing ideology of individual fulfillment, people are likely to treat you like you're almost a criminal. For a long time, you know, people in America who loved Jesus didn't have to have much tension with the larger society because they would at least give lip service to Jesus. But those days are over. Now it's a whole different thing. And you can really find genuine cost in being different. A few years ago, I was speaking at a conference out in New England, and one of the assistant pastors there, a young guy in his 20s, was talking to me, and he was in grad school and working towards a PhD. And so I said, oh, great, how's that going? He says, well, I think I'm going to have to give it up. And I said, why? And he says, well, I have an advisor who's overseeing my progress towards this degree. And if you know anything about academia, your advisor is like God. Like, you will not get a PhD unless your advisor says so. They're like God. His advisor was a woman. And she had a lot of trips to academic conferences and whatnot and would bring him along. And so he goes on one of these trips, and when he gets there, he finds out she's only booked one hotel room for the two of them. And he spends the rest of the week arguing with her about why he's not going to take showers with her in the room, and so on. And this escalated as she continually pressured him to betray his commitment to Jesus and to his wife to please her. And in the end, he had to give up his PhD to follow Jesus. That's what it came down to. That's what a sacrificed life looks like, folks. So, different. Second thing about a sacrificed life, it's a new way of thinking. A key part of giving our bodies as a sacrifice to Jesus is that we follow Him into a new way of thinking. And when our thinking changes, of course, everything changes. Once you realize that this present physical world is not all that there is, things change. Once you realize you have a destiny beyond this life, everything that you look at in this life looks different. Once you realize truly, truly in the depths of your heart that you are loved by God beyond comprehension, things change. You find yourself thinking differently about life, differently about other people, differently about how you spend your time, how you spend your energy. And as your thinking has changed, he says, you will prove or you will find out the will of God. Now, the way I read this, what he's saying is, as your thinking changes, you will prove out in your life just how good, pleasing, and perfect God's will really is. You will experience it as good, pleasing, and perfect. As your thinking changes, you will see that it's a better way. Not just a little bit better, a lot better. And it won't be a burden, and it won't be a law to keep like the religious legalists, but rather the delightful experience of living the truly good life. Then number three, he says, the sacrifice life is a life of service. None of us should think that we stand alone or that we don't need the church community. He says, in his compassion, God has connected us to one another, and we each need each other. In Christ, we have been connected to one new nation, one new community, and one new body. And as members of this body belonging to Christ, we who have been sacrificed to God should give of what we have in service to the best of our ability. And he gives a list. And the list here is a list of examples to kind of give us the idea. It doesn't mean that this is a complete list. You don't have to like make yourself fit in one of those boxes. That's not the point. The point is whatever you got, whatever you can do, do it as passionately and fervently as you can to serve your brothers and sisters. Be devoted in serving them. The normal Christian life is always a life of service. Even if the only thing you can do is pray. You know, if you don't even have to be able to speak out loud. You can be an invalid, unable to move, unable to speak, you can still pray. And you know what? The interesting thing is at the end, the pay's the same. That's important to remember. At the end, when you stand before Jesus, the pay's the same. The only question is, did you give the best you could with what you had? That's all. All right? Now, if I don't serve you all with all that God has given me, then I'm disobeying Jesus and robbing you of the benefit that could have been yours. And if I don't put myself in a position to receive what you are giving, then I'm not only saying no to the gift of Jesus, but I'm denying the value of your God-given and God-ordained service. So I need to be giving, and I also need to be receiving all the time. Finally, the sacrificed life will be a life of love and prayer. And the band can start making their way back up here. Here he uses phrases like love sincerely and be devoted to one another and don't be lazy about showing your devotion to one another. This love is to be expressed in helping and hospitality and showing respect and in sharing. As it happens, this week is also the 20th anniversary of a church that was planted out of this church down in Hyde Park. And they had a celebration last night. We went there. And it was a lot of fun. And one of the speakers was a woman named Sonia Singh. Now, Sonia and Jordan were a part of our church 20-some years ago. He was a grad student down at University of Chicago. And she's from Hawaii. He was from California. So living in Chicago was a tribulation for them. It should be said. And he ended up being here long enough to get a master's and a PhD, so it was 7 years of tribulation for them. Anyway, they met us, and they became a part of our church. And she was sharing about how in the early years, they moved, like in the space of 2 or 3 years, 4 times, and they were really sick of moving. And one night, she had a dream. And in the dream, she was ushered by God into this place that was like a ballroom. And there were all these people coming and going in the ballroom. And then there was a room off the side, and it was filled with weird clothing, like fur coats and other kinds of weird clothing that you would like see in a props room for a theater or something, a costume room. And she thought, that's a weird dream. Well, anyway, she knew this lady that she had done some work for who lived in one of those big mansion houses that are down in Hyde Park. I don't know if you've ever been down to Hyde Park because that's like another city from here. But, you know, there's some really amazingly big houses down there. Anyway, this lady had one of these big houses, and
she had an upstairs apartment. And so she was going over there to invite this lady to come to one of her shows because she was a theater person. And this lady says, the people in the apartment upstairs are moving out. Why don't you come? Why don't you think about moving into my apartment? And she thought, no way. We've already moved four times. We're not moving again. And the lady says, just let me show you. And she takes her upstairs, and there's a, like this ballroom upstairs. I mean, it was like a ballroom, and that's like the living room of this apartment. It had been a ballroom back in the day, and now it was like the living room of this little apartment. And then she goes off in the side room, and lo and behold, in the side room, it was the costume room, and it was literally filled with costumes for, like, in the theater. It was like exactly like in the dream. Like people whose lives have been sacrificed to God, Jordan and Sonia packed up one more time and moved to the apartment with the ballroom. Well, it turned out that they started meeting lots of young people from University of Chicago, and they started a group down there, and they met in the ballroom. And they were crowding in a lot of people, and it would hold them. They could easily hold 40, 50 people in the ballroom. And not only that, but they started coming around, not just for the meetings, but all the time during the week, because, you know, college students need to go to someplace, something that seems normal. And so they were hanging out there, and they found themselves mentoring all these young people. And that was the genesis of Hyde Park Venue Church. From the bar. And the interesting thing is, from those early days, the people who came to that gathering in the ballroom, those among from among that group that was there, five or six of them are leading churches in different parts of the world today. Which is all to say, when your life has been sacrificed to God and you let Him direct and you live that out in concrete ways of loving one another, including letting all these people come in and out of your house all the time, hospitality, God might do some really amazing things with your life that you never expected and didn't even want. It's very interesting. In the early years of Christianity, the Romans were apt to say, see how they love one another, and it could be like that today. But, of course, it only works out that way if we've truly made ourselves a living sacrifice to God. If we hang on to our own selfishness and our own ambition, it doesn't lead us towards love. And in this, we can see just how spiritual someone really is. Any kind of spirituality that's not abounding in love is not true spirituality, but only religion. Now, this weekend, we celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King. And in a sermon in early 1968, he quoted Jesus' words from Mark 10 about self-sacrifice. And I will shamelessly steal from him. The passage was Mark 10:43, where Jesus says, whoever desires to become great among you shall be your servant. And Dr. King went on to say this, everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. And those who learn the power of self-sacrifice will one day overcome. And so today we're going to conclude by singing that old civil rights theme song, We Shall Overcome, admitting that it only comes through self-sacrifice. Let's stand.